Well, hello there. What's happening?
How's it going?
What day is it?
It is Wednesday.
Wednesday.
PM.
It's Wednesday. You know what that means? It's PR Tech Wednesdays.
Woo!
Awesome. This is the weekly webinar where thought leaders discuss the latest in PR tech. If it's Wednesdays, it's PR Tech Wednesday. We do this every Wednesday from 12 to 1 Pacific. It's free. And you can sign up at prtechwednesdays.com. We are going to go a little out of order today. We're going to push Bookstagram of the week to the end because our guest, Dmitry Dragilev, has to leave a little early. He's going to cut out at 45 past the hour. But stay with us. We've got a killer book for Bookstagram of the week. Stay with us to cover that. I just want to start with a shout out to EFF, the Electronic Freedom Foundation, champions user privacy, free expression, and innovation through impact litigation, policy analysis, grassroots activism, and technology development. The Electronic Freedom Foundation is a U.S. 501c3 nonprofit, and you can donate online at ericschwartzman.com/EFF. Dmitry, welcome to PR Tech Wednesdays.
Thanks. Thanks for having me.
This is awesome. I'm excited to have you. I'm excited to talk about justreachout.io, which takes a really novel approach to media relations by empowering clients to pitch their own stories, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Anybody out there who is not versed in PR uses us, or people who are versed in PR but just want to be even more prolific at it.
So what's the problem that justreachout.io solves?
Well, I was kind of fed up with PR firms, and I did not want to pay PR firms any more money. And I thought that mid-sized businesses, small businesses, mom and pop shops should not be paying PR firms, and they can do it themselves. And so Just Reach Out enables you to do PR all on your own without PR firms. Pitch journalists, get featured in press, all that stuff.
You know, as someone who has a PR background, I know that there is a whole class of clients that are underserved that really can't be served effectively by PR agencies. A lot of those clients do try to work with PR agencies. It usually does not end well. But if you think about like different classes of clients, and maybe if you think about like maybe at the top, a client that serves a huge market, and at the bottom, a client that serves a small market. I'm not talking about addressable market. I'm talking about market. Like somebody like Toyota, right? They're building cars. They're releasing a new car. You know, they've got to sell those cars quickly. They need to get the word out globally. Obviously, it's going to be difficult for them to do their own PR. They're going to need huge apparatus to handle something like that.
Right.
But when it comes to a pre-funded startup or a thought leader or a self-published author or a small business, I mean, a lot of those guys really are coming to PR for completely different reasons than, you know, a company like Toyota. So when you think about like for justreachout.io, who's your ideal customer?
People that have content marketing on hand, so content marketers, anybody who knows a little bit about content, creates amazing content and needs to PR it, needs to get publicity for their site. A lot of people that sign up are actual founders, and then they'll usually get a content person or content marketer to take the account and run with it. But we have 5,000 customers, and I think the majority of them are in some marketing position, either a marketer or content marketer who's doing marketing, you know, activity for their startup, for their small business.
And you sort of came to this space after having led earned media relations at a number of startups, right?
Right. Yeah. I was self-taught. I quit my job as a software engineer, moved out to Silicon Valley, and sold everything I had, and was walking around trying to get a job, and I just happened to get in contact with a startup where the founder was number 20 at LinkedIn, and he was a DIY PR guy, and so he taught me a lot. And from there on, from that time on, I just started hacking things on my own and working for many different startups over the years, doing PR, and yeah, eventually led to an acquisition by Google. And then after that, started building my own tool to help people do so, created my own course and my blog and all that.
But you did have some experience working with a PR firm that didn't go well, right?
Yeah, many, many different experiences over the last 10 years.
Let's talk about that a little bit, yeah. Because I mean, I know there are so many conflicts in client PR agency relationships. So what was your experience there? How did that work out? What were some of the areas where you felt like, you know, this isn't working?
Well, I think right off the bat, they take 10 grand or 7 grand, and the first month is going to be spent creating ideas and creating pitches and researching you and thinking about what things you should pitch. And you're wasting pretty much like 15 grand, like a month, month and a half of just like them thinking about stuff, which you can probably do in about a week internally or 2 weeks. And there's a lot of stuff that they kind of say that they do that you can just do much faster all on your own. They don't know you, and it takes them a while to figure things out. And they're doing this for like tens of 20 people. I don't know, different client, many different clients. And
sure.
So it's just that right off the bat is not warm fuzzies for me. And then after that, what do I have to look forward to? Well, they have a giant list of people which they pitch different ideas to on an ongoing basis all the time. And presumably they know people, meaning like people have published an article or gotten one of their clients featured somewhere, right? And so, yeah, but like, it's not, they don't hold the keys to these people. They're not best buds. They don't go drinking with them every day. It's kind of like, you know, like they'll reach out to somebody who they've gotten an answer from before, or maybe not. A lot of them do not have relationships with many publications that they claim they do. And so they'll just ping everybody on the list with that pitch.
And it's tough to verify too, right? I mean, if someone says they have a relationship, how do you really verify that? But you mentioned two other conflicts, which I think are worth pointing out. You know, the first one being that, you know, you are committed to your business, but a PR person is not exclusive. They're representing a portfolio of clients. They've got to sort of keep them all happy. And so they're not focused on the same results you are. And the other thing you mentioned, which I think is relevant, you know, you're a specialist and an expert in whatever it is you do. And a PR person is typically a media relations generalist. And so you're essentially paying them a month or 2 months just to come up to speed on you. And that doesn't seem to make a lot of sense, certainly for specific types of clients.
Yeah, I think it's just the whole thing is just I'm paying somebody to pimp me in front of all these other people. And it just like I don't need an assistant who's going to send out all these pitches saying I'm great. And they don't know me as well anyways. And how long are you going to hang out with that person until they get to know you? It's just like, I don't know, you're in it for like 5-6 months until they really get to know you. And now you've drained 60 grand into this relationship or 50 grand into this relationship. Now they kind of know you and now they're going to go and do pitching. But now remember, they have like 20 other people to pitch, right? And they have this giant list of people. So like, it's just cheaper, faster, and easier just to do this yourself, like literally. And journalists actually prefer to hear from the actual company and not a PR professional that claims to know how they can create these stories. And you know, they're middlemen that small businesses and mid-sized businesses don't need in their lives. I think large companies, That's okay for large companies to communicate that way. I mean, Amazon, you know, so.
And it may not be even so much size as it is sort of maturity. Like maturity. If you think about like your father, and so you think about like the needs of a toddler versus the needs of a preteen versus the needs of a teenager, right? As a child grows, they have different needs. And I would argue that businesses, as they mature, have different needs as well. So you think about like the startup phase, that's pretty scrappy, maybe kind of looking for, you know, where they're fit. Usually that involves some sort of a pivot. You move from startup to change up phase, looking for a product market fit, trying to prove value. If you nail the fit, you move into scale up phase where you try to grow and sort of get to a point where there's not much headroom in the market left for you. And if you actually make it past that final stage into the final level of the pyramid, I would call that a grown up, right? So startup, change up, scale up, grown up. And yeah. I would suggest that as a company matures through that cycle, that their media relations needs change as well. If you think about like, you know, the pay-sell model, paid, earned, shared, and owned media, you might almost say that owned would be the best place to start. I know you've published 1,500 articles all over the web. So you sort of start by building your home base. Then once you've got something to share, you start building community on social. At that point, right, you've got some cred, you're ready to go out and earn some media, you know, get featured on other people's media. And then, of course, if it makes sense from there, you would add advertising. So many people start with advertising and blow through a ton of cash before they're ready. Or, as you said, go straight to PR before they've done owned and earned and really set themselves up.
Yeah, there's steps that I usually guide our customers through on our platform or even outside of it. I say, hey, when you have nothing, and the majority, like I'll probably say out of 5,000, maybe 3,000 or even 4,000 people on our platform, they've never really had PR before. They have an app, they have a book, they have whatever they have. That's their first thing online. And so they jump into it and they go straight to our journalist search tool. They find journalists and they're pitching their book to them. And I'm like, whoa, that you're nobody. Like, you can't just pitch your book or your app or whatever you're working on right away. You got to establish some street cred. And that's when I tell them, hey, go to the press opportunities search, find what journalists are looking for. This is like Haro, and we index all of those. We have 15 different sources we pull them from. Answer some of those, get some press mentions. Then when you're contacting journalists, you can say, hey, I actually was mentioned on like 3 blogs here. They're not features, but they're mentions. I have some street cred, and now I can pitch whatever I'm doing as, you know, like the next step. And so like you can maybe develop relationships that way. Maybe you develop relationships from answering an ask from a journalist, and then later down the line, you can get them to feature you later on. Who knows? But I always say, start with the baby steps, get some press mentions, start baking your online profile. And then you can, you know, maybe do guest posting, maybe do some of these podcast appearances. You're starting to bake your online profile and then go for the main story.
I mean, having worked with a number of clients who were new to PR and sort of walking them through the process, I know that, you know, figuring out and sort of explaining to a new client what makes news is, you know, part of the job. PBS NewsHour has a chart on newsworthiness, and they say there are 5 things that make something newsworthy. And here they are: timeliness, you know, it's happening now; proximity, it's happening close to you; conflict and controversy, right? It's something exciting; human interest, it's emotional; and relevant, it's relevant to the media outlet. You're essentially, right, empowering individuals and organizations that aren't a good fit for a PR agency to do their own media relations. So how do you teach them how to create newsworthy content? How do you help them with that?
Yeah, so the first thing that I usually say is looking at past queries that journalists have put out there. So we have a tool in there that allows you to look at all of Haro's and all of tweets on journal requests and all the different requests on Profnet and all these different, I'm talking about newsletters. If anybody's listening to this and is wondering what am I mentioning? There's all these newsletters where journalists put their queries, their asks, and hundreds of these a day, maybe hundreds of thousands we process a day. And so, these asks are there. And so what we do is we kind of index all of them, allows you to look at like Inc. magazine. What has Inc. magazine recently asked for the last 3 months? You kind of start to get ideas as to what journalists are asking. And that's a good thing to think about when you're thinking about what you're going to pitch and how you're going to kind of pitch and how it's going to work, right?
So you're sort of aggregating the HARO queries to show sort of what the arc is with respect to
what to show like what are people asking.
Do that.
Yeah, I don't think a lot of people slice and dice that way. We allow people to kind of think of what they should be pitching in the future based on these asks by analyzing them. It allows them to kind of figure that out a little bit, and it's useful to people to think about it from that standpoint. Like researching what journalists want and need, and trying to tailor me as a customer, what do I do that relates to all these? And the other thing is looking at our journalist search and finding what people are covering. Just this morning, we had a session with a CBD company, and there's like a dozen of these for every regular food company, you know, out there. It's so many crazy CBD everything right now. But they're, for example, for them to think of angles, they're thinking, you know, 10 misconceptions about CBD, because they're reading articles that journalists are putting out, and these articles have a lot of misconceptions about like wellness, anxiety, topics that are related to what CBD does, but not necessarily CBD. They're not seeing anything around CBD. So they're relating what they're reading to what they do and coming up with a new twist on it. It's a brainstorming exercise. It takes time and experimentation. What I typically tell people, get an idea together, send it out to journalists. If people bite, then go and actually invest time into creating data around it. For example, we had a bathroom company that creates bathroom supplies, which is the most boring thing on earth. You can't really do much with PR on there. So they thought, oh, what is the dirtiest surface in the bathroom? That was their idea. And so what they did is they took that and they started pitching it to 10 people covering hygiene articles. Like they typed in hygiene, they found all the journalists. And so when people responded saying, yeah, I want to hear like what's the dirtiest surface, then they had to go and do this study on figuring out what, you know, that is. So yeah, it stems from
that. That was a gross example, I must say.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, definitely. There was another one by Fractal. They did one on hygiene in the cities. Like they tested how clean what kind of bacteria was on the subways in San Francisco. Oh. They went all different lines and saw the dirtiest one. And so that was this was like some kind of like a statistician firm that does like statistics. They wanted PR. And so this was a good fit. We did one, another example of this is we have a customer is an automobile dealership, a car dealership, which is very boring. Like, how do you do PR for that? And so they try stuff. If journalists respond, then they go invest time into it. But they did one, which is like men versus women, how much men overpay versus women when they buy cars, because men are impulse buyers and they usually overpay by like a lot. And so that was a big kind of thing that came back. People are like, yeah, I want to see, but I want to see like, you know, different seasons and seasonality of that versus just overall. And so that was good feedback for them to be like, okay, that's what we should research. So I'll never tell them go ahead and create data and then pitch it. I'll say like, shop it around, see if you get responses, and then you know, go ahead and invest stuff into it.
It's interesting, you know, your approach to media relations is almost like an MVP approach to product development, you know, which basically says, you know, don't necessarily build the whole product because you can't guess what the market wants. Just build like, you know, a sort of a framework that you can then show to people, see what they try to use, and then build out those features rather than develop features that people don't want. Right. You're suggesting in media relations is, hey, you know, sort of put it out there and see what people respond to, and then develop that pitch if in fact people respond to it, correct?
Absolutely. Yep, exactly. Shop it around, develop it as people are responding, and then keep changing it up. Your headline is always your subject line, right? So that's your number one goal, is get that headline open rate more than 50% of the email sends you do. If you got something going on there, then now bake that pitch.
And you're bullish on research, right? You're bullish on exclusive primary research.
Yes, that's the number one. So like journalists love studies. I mean, this was my last company that I worked at, Polar. That's all we did is we literally, I would go on techmeme.com and I would just peruse the web for any newsworthy stuff. And then I would create a poll and I would get 100 respondents with it within an hour on Twitter. And I would pitch it to that journalist saying, hey, oh, you covered Snapchat acquiring Facebook. We have a poll here that says, you know, most people believe the deal won't go through. Or do we have a new PS4 versus Xbox? Great. Here's a new poll that does this, that says that people prefer Xbox. And so we would always create these studies, and data just really helps them back up their arguments, make the articles more complete, more interesting. And it's not the thing, it's not the product, it's not the service, it's not the book, it's something more. It helps people learn, and it just is a good, it's what journalists need too. Fractal did a study on this saying this was one of the top things journalists crave and want, insights, data. I'm just like, people listening to this might say, listen, Dimitris, this is great, but I don't have time or effort or time or money to invest in data. And that's where I say, you don't need to do that. Create an idea, pitch the data. Once you have CNN committed to having you on, go and create and actually get that data.
So, but how do you pitch data you don't have?
So literally you think of what that outcome would be. So for the bathroom company, they thought that they pitched it in a way where it's, hey, we have a study on the dirtiest surface in the bathroom. They didn't know what it would be, but they'd said the top three is shower curtains, toilets, and floors. Would you like to see the data of everything we collected? So it's a little bit vague-ish, but the headline is still there and it's still snappier. With the dealership, the car dealership, they said, hey, we know that men overpay 3x versus women when buying cars. We have data to break it all down. Are you at all interested? So it kind of changes from company to company, but essentially you don't put numbers into it, or if you put numbers into it, you have to switch them up when you get the real data, which is okay. It's like a bait and switch approach where you just come up with a number, you think what the number might be, and then you get, take a wild guess, you pitch it. If a journalist comes back saying, great, I want to see the data, how did you collect it? That's when you pivot back, you go back, you go and collect, do all your work, and then you pitch it back. So, well, actually, this was the numbers. We just reran it. We updated it. Here's the full data set. And sorry, it's taken me a little time to get back to you, which is fine, by the way. You can take a week. You can take 2 weeks. Journalists have plenty of time. You know, they'll wait. You know, they have a lot of work to do. So they're not going to be hunting you down for this right away.
Well, where I come from, we call that flying without a net.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's sneaky, but I'd say try. A lot of our customers have a lot of success with it. If you are very worried that and this is a big risk for you or your reputation, don't put any numbers in it. You know, be very generic about it. This is the study that we're run. We have some data around it. Are you at all interested? You can hint at the outcome, you know.
So, you know, for 10 years, I hosted a Meet the Media panel online for the Public Relations Society of America, where I would basically book a number of journalists on a specific beat, and we would have a conversation. And I always heard the same thing over and over again, a lot of what you say in your presentations, you know, they want you to know who they are. They want you to pitch specific custom tailored pitches to them. But, you know, there's an economics component to the whole thing that doesn't really add up. And here it is, okay? Even if you do your research, even if you get straight to the point, even if you say why they should cover your story, right? Journalists are still getting more pitches daily than they could possibly cover.
Yeah.
Like, there's just more coming in than they have the capacity to ingest. So for that reason, you know, a lot of PR pros don't want to invest too much time in a custom tailored pitch for a journalist who's getting 20 pitches a day and may not respond anyway. And so if it's a numbers game, right, and only a certain number of people are going to respond, then the alternate approach is to create a solid pitch, but to go broad with it and, you know, see what happens that way. Because maybe someone, if you cast a bigger net, you know, someone will be interested.
Yeah. Why didn't that pitch out? I would say is a great, 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 great suggestion, you know, because it's hedges your risks. Personalizing is amazing. And I'm all for quality over quantity. I'm the quality over quantity guy. And we take customers out of our service, out of our platform for just sending mass pitches. But there needs to be a way to scale your effort, right?
Right.
And so I say, try the pitch with a few, get a high open rate, send 10 pitches. Your open rate is 5 out of 10. You've hit the nail on the head. Now maybe you can scale it a little bit.
Okay.
Don't just go out of the gate pitching 200 people with an idea that you don't have any data for. If you can't get it on a smaller scale with follow-ups, don't spam everybody and their mother. It'll help. It'll hurt you. It'll hurt your deliverability reputation in Gmail overall, all ESP providers.
Yeah. That's particularly the case for DIY PR. For DIY media relations.
Yeah.
Now you say that, you know, rather than take a fully baked story out there, it's better to collaborate on mutually beneficial ideas with journalists. Talk to us about that.
So, like, you in your office with your friends can only create so many ideas when you brainstorm. And you can read all the articles that journalist has written. And by the way, that's what you should do before you pitch a journalist. You should read the articles they've written. You can't read all of them, but read the last 3 or 4. Make sure that you're in line with what they've written. Because 9 out of 10 times when you pitch them, you don't do that. You're like, oh, they've written one article. Great. That's on topic. I'll pitch them. No, not great. But collaboration is a powerful tool. So when you pitch them an idea, have an open sort of be open to suggestions from them on how the story will go and see how you can position yourself around it so that it becomes, you know, a story that kind of works for both of you. Because a lot of times they have ideas that they want to write about going in the future that you just can't think of, right? And so it's an open-ended street. Once you pique their interest with something, then have them help you massage that into a story. You got to come up with a headline. You got to come up with a story, but that's just to pique their interest. You know, they will change things up, and that's where you need their buy-in. They're a person, you're a person. Think of it as like a face-to-face conversation in a bar with them, right? How can you both create a product together? You both have to have some kind of stake in it. You both have to kind of massage it into a story. So
I was at the Public Relations Society of America's LA chapter gathering. It was in West Hollywood a couple weeks ago. There was a panel. And, you know, before there's chit chat and mingling. And a lot of people were talking about, you know, sort of red flags with new clients, the type of clients that come in with red flags, where nobody wants to represent them because they know it's not going to end well. And the funny thing is, you know, for that type of a client, you're the perfect solution. Like if everyone in PR knew about you, I'll bet you that they would then refer that type of a client to you because it doesn't make sense for them to take on a client like that. They're not going to be able to, they're just going to lose money on the deal anyways. And in addition to having the contact database of media contacts that you provide, you also provide the training and the templates, right? So tell us about the templates and the checklists and the resources.
Well, over 6 years in business now, I've found that people need templates to brainstorm their pitches from. So we, 5,000 people sending pitches, we analyze a lot of pitches that get sent to journalists. And so we've compiled the best pitches that have gotten opens and clicks and responses into sort of a set of templates people can pick from when they're doing their outreach. Now, they do different types of outreach. They can might do journalists straight up pitching. They might be responding to journalists' asks. They might be asking a broken link to be fixed. And that's a separate activity altogether. But that's another PR activity that we let you do, is we can help you search for broken links, find them, and ask people to replace them all, you know, within the platform. But we have templates and a way for you to kind of figure out what you should be pitching. The other problem we found is a lot of times you just, if you're doing PR, you don't have a structured week by week schedule. And that's something that you really need to have in order to be productive at it and be really, really good at it. And so what we have is an action plan that gives you week by week schedule of what to do. And we have a strategy and tactics builder, which asks you 7 questions and it tells you a personalized strategy of PR, what you should be doing every single day. Tactics that you should be doing personalized to you, and specifics on how to implement them in our academy pages. So when you take that, when you go through that onboarding process, you answer those questions, you get sort of the higher level tactics you need to understand and implement, and also a week by week action plan that we hold you accountable for. And so when you are done with like week 2, you say, check in, and you check in with us, and we kind of hold you accountable to a cadence. And that's, success lies on that. I mean, we want you to be
level, at a high level, walk us through kind of the onboarding process.
You answer 7 questions. These questions are asking you if you have a content marketer on team, if you have keywords that are associated with your industry, what those keywords might be. It'll ask you, have you story angles? It'll ask you different things. What industry you're in? What's your goal in terms of PR, long-term, short-term? And so after that, you get this list of like 3 or 4 things that you should be implementing, and maybe 5 things that you should learn. And so then you're like, okay, here's my like outreach tactics. This is what I'll be doing. And here's like the list of things I should learn. Like, what should I do week to week? So you click the next onboarding session button. And that's the last part of it, is like, hey, this is what your week 1 looks like. You're going to do these 3 keyword. You're going to identify 3 keywords. You're going to do 3 outreach pitches, and you know, week 2 is going to be follow-ups. And so you're going to get to see your calendar basically week by week. And from then on, you hit, all right, I'm ready. And then you go in and you have the tools for you to find journalists or find journalist asks and implement those tactics. And you can always get back to your tactics, you know, in the navigation. Week 1, you'll get notifications every week saying, hey, there's new journalist asks. Go ahead and respond to these journalists. It'll give you new ideas, who to pitch. But eventually, you're going to find yourself kind of in the academy, learning a little bit about how to build relationships. You're going to find yourself in the journalist tool, in the press opportunities tool, searching for journalists. Yeah, that's typically how it goes. And yeah, you're sending out pitches, you're learning, you're looking at your open rate, you're looking at your response rate, all that stuff.
In terms of the templates, you said, you know, you have a lot of information on which ones work and which ones don't. How are you able to keep that information current? Because I got to think it changes all the time.
Well, we look at response rate and open rate. The first thing that anybody needs to do when they pitch and when they write a pitch is writing that email and that subject line. And so that subject line is really important when you start sending your emails. That subject line is what we look at a lot of times to see the success of the pitch. The next part we look at is the response rate. So if that subject line is really high open rate, then we'll single out that pitch. But the next part is how many times was that pitch open and is there a response? So those are in the level of priority in terms of success. That's how I would say the subject line, open rate, number one priority. And the second priority after that, number of opens of that pitch by the journalist. And the third one is the actual response rate. That's how we judge it. And we have benchmark data for that in the tool as well. So you can kind of stack up and see like what's everyone else got and how do I compare to that? So that, you know, we have campaigns and team members and all that. And so you can look at your campaign and kind of see how it stacks up to the other campaigns.
When you look at most of the creative library services like Shutterstock or Unsplash or even like music libraries, right, they give you those filters, but they also give you how current something is. Because the fear is once something starts to peak, it'll become overused and burn itself out.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So that's why I had asked you, you know, how do you keep it current?
Current. Yeah. So I'd say we change them up every quarter or so with new data, just based on new data from people who are pitching. A lot of times I'd say we are based on Google News and Bing News and the news sections of like millions of articles. So I'd say number one criteria is you got to search the last month of articles and see how you relate to those articles. The original version of our software was based on that, right? Like I used to go on Google News and TechMeme and literally type in my topic. And my topic was like PR or like how to pitch journalists or like entrepreneurs doing marketing. And I would look at everybody who is covering that and I would pitch them saying, hey, I do PR and, you know, like I'd love you to sign up and like my course or my blog or whatever. I didn't have a platform back then. And so I would literally pitch everybody who's currently covering that to try and cover me. That's my story and the acquisition story or whatever it may be. And so you're always relating what you got to what people are recently covering on your topic and trying to draw that parallel, draw the bridge between you and that person that wrote something about your topic. So staying current, it's by definition in the whole idea behind Just Reach Out was we're only searching latest articles, right, on the topic. We're not going something that was published a year ago, only latest articles, and seeing how recent of a topic is it for that journalist and how much that journalist has covered that topic in the last month.
Sure.
And those are the people you would single out in email, you know.
You know, it's interesting. When I first started in public relations nearly 20 years ago, there were so many targets for media. There were so many hard news outlets to go after. And, you know, there aren't anymore. There aren't nearly as many hard news targets. There's plenty of lifestyle opportunity. There's plenty of sort of quasi soft news opportunities online. But in terms of like national hard news outlets on the scale of the New York Times or the Wall Street Journal, you know, which have a certain are very discerning in their sources, you know, there's so many fewer of those. But if you can nail a story like that, boy, you can fund a company. I mean, I've seen it happen. You can turn around a product line. I mean, there's so much you can do with that type of national hard news attention. But when you think about like the sort of minimum viable product approach to media relations of sort of, you know, dangling maybe some research that you don't have yet, or maybe, you know, stretching your title to CMO, if in fact you're just the marketing guy, and that seems a little bit riskier because, you know, there's so few of those guys now and you don't want to burn any bridges. So what about those types of clients that are looking for that, you know, national hard news coverage? Are they still going to be good served by the platform? Are they going to need a little bit more handholding?
Clients that want to go after big name publications need to have something very, thought through. First of all, they needed to have some credibility in the past, right? You can't just go from rags to riches overnight. So I always say, you know, you got to figure out if you're going to be pitching big name media, what that credibility level is. And it could be you have a big name investor on your team. You got to have a big name associated with your company, a big partnership with a big name, or whatever that big name is. You need to look at somebody who's covered that big name, right? And see if these people would be interested in covering you. That's usually the path that I take to try and get to that big publication, Wall Street Journal, TechCrunch, CNN, whatever it may be. Just today, there was a customer, they want to get on CNN really badly, and they saw a startup being mentioned on there. They interviewed a very young guy in a startup. These guys are veterans in the space. And so I said, look on LinkedIn, see who you know at that startup, try and get an intro through that startup, look at your connections. How are you related to that big name who's being interviewed or is related or been covered there? That's usually a great way to get in there. And faking your data or faking your name credentials. Do what's comfortable for you, right? So I have no trouble of coming up with data on my head, thinking this will be great, pitching it, and then pivoting on it and saying, hey, we actually re-ran that data, and that data is this now. Does this make sense for a story? I see no trouble with that. If you have some trouble with it, you won't pitch the actual number. You omit that number out of there.
Got it. So, I'm surprised you go full frontal at PR, because I think PR could be a great lead generation channel for you, because there's a lot of clients out there that PR doesn't want to represent because it's not a good fit. And if those guys referred to you, if you paid a commission or something like that, I would imagine you would have more leads than you know what to do with.
Yes, my ideal lead is a person that's committed and driven to do PR on their own. And that's a tough ask. Like over 6 years, I've been trying to help and serve this customer. Mm. And that's really tough to get people to commit to doing it themselves.
Yeah.
And so
a lot of work.
I've had so many partnerships, and it's like day and night a lot of times, because most people don't want to do PR themselves for many different reasons. And you need to kind of fight and make them realize that you're going to get way more out of doing it themselves than if they hired someone.
Well, I want to thank you for taking the time to do this.
Sure, of course.
I know you have to run.
Yeah, sorry. It's a crazy week right now,
Sure. Thanks for taking the time. I appreciate it. Where can people find you and get more information?
It's justreachout.io, and you can find everything on there. There's an about, there is a contact, there's everything else.
And we'll have a link in the show notes. Thanks so much. Stick around for the Bookstagram of the week. Bye-bye.
All right. Cool.
Maybe all right. I have to log you out. Let's see if I have to log you out. I might have to. Yeah, I think I can.
So should I keep this live?
There we are. I'm going to turn your mic off too. Awesome. So that was interesting, huh? That's an interesting service, right? A DIY PR platform. Probably something whose time has come. Interesting how scrappy it is, but I can certainly see its value. Okay. So let's do Bookstagram of the week. So I just so happen to have the Bookstagram of the week right here. And our Bookstagram of the week is Growth Hacker Marketing by Ryan Holiday. And this is presented to you by the 2020 Startups Guide to PR. You can download the 2020 Startups Guide to PR and learn how to map tactics to your growth stage at ericschwartzman.com/startup. Now, this is not a new book. It's been out for a while. Ryan Holiday is an Austin-based PR pro who specializes in book PR. And I really think this, having read a lot of books on growth marketing, I think this is really one of the foundational books on the topic. And what it's about how mega brands like Dropbox, Instagram, and Snapchat were barely a blip on the radar a few years ago, and now they're worth billions of dollars. With hardly a dime spent on traditional marketing, no press releases, no TV commercials, no billboards, right? Instead, they relied on growth hacker marketing to build their empires. It's a quick read. It's packed with useful information and insights on how to generate demand, attract leads, and win customers. So if you're at a raising seed money or at a change up, pivoting to find a product market fit, and you want to leverage earned media to accelerate growth, download my 2020 Startups Guide to PR at ericschwartzman.com/startup. I want to thank our gold sponsors, Flux Branding, a world-renowned resource for defining your visual brand. Flux Branding is a group of creative visionaries and graphic designers dedicated to helping clients conceptualize and realize brand identities. And you can visit them online at fluxbranding.com. And Digital Dragon, where children can develop the skills they need to prosper in the age of machines. Digital Dragon teaches digital literacy to tomorrow's programmers and technology entrepreneurs. More information at digitaldragon.com. I want to thank everyone again for joining us. If it's Wednesdays, it's PR Tech Wednesdays, every Wednesday from 12 to 1 p.m., and we'll see you next week. Bye-bye.